D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Adam Vingan here with you on a dreary, rainy Wednesday in our city. I hope everybody is having a wonderful start to their day. Nonetheless, big show today. Tennessee Titans head coach Brian Callahan is scheduled to address reporters at 1:15. As I understand it, it's moved around like three times this morning.
I wonder what he has to say.
We will carry that news conference live at 1:15, unless it changes times again, and then we'll carry it whenever that is. Brian Callahan clearly does not work on our schedule. But whenever he takes the podium, which is now scheduled for 1:15, we will bring that to you live. Mitch Light, college football editor from The Athletic, will join us a little bit earlier today at 11:30. Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow at noon. Chris Mason, Predators television analyst at 1 o'clock. Predators, by the way, shutout win last night, 2-0 against the New York Rangers, the slumping New York Rangers. First time, by the way, the Rangers have been shut out this season, which I was actually surprised to learn. But the Predators get a win at home, 2-0, to start off their four-game homestand. It was an entertaining game, to be sure. The Predators will be back at it again tomorrow night at Bridgestone Arena against the Pittsburgh Penguins. So we will get into Predators later in the program. But the news of yesterday and the news of today, it was reported early yesterday afternoon by Jeremy Fowler of ESPN that the Titans are planning to make a switch at quarterback. Mason Rudolph, I love the way that this story is phrased, and this is not picking on Teron Davenport, who wrote the story, because I believe it was Jeremy Fowler who tweeted it first. Mason Rudolph is the logical candidate to step in for starter Will Levis, as who else would it be?
Hey, maybe
we nominated Jeffrey Simmons yesterday.
Guy,
yeah. He's played some
is
fullback.
Is Trevor Siemian still on the on the roster?
I was wondering that. In fact, it was actually Mason Kinsey that was...
Too many Masons. Mason Rudolph.
Right, I'm
too many Masons.
There's a lot of Masons out there. But Mason Kinsey was sitting next to Mason Rudolph, I think, or maybe it was Levis. And I'm thinking, who is that? Is that Siemian? And then I realized it was because number 12, you know, you think it's a quarterback. It's like, who's 12? Is that Siemian? And then I see, you know, Kinsey catching a pass and he's returning punts. Like, oh.
Mason Kinsey.
But I am curious to hear how he presents this. I think he kind of had it going. We were speculating on Monday when they had the press conference that they were moving in this direction. They just weren't ready to announce it. Maybe they hadn't sat down Will Levis and had the talk. But I sense that this is a shift now going forward into a different mode. It's not anymore of, hey, let's try to put the foundation around Will Levis, give him the environment to succeed. Let's make him the focus of the future. Let's develop the quarterback. I think they feel like they've put in their time there and they haven't had enough return on investment. And I think this is a signal that they're moving in another direction. Now, Mason Rudolph could get hurt in the first half.
Yeah.
And he's right back in there and has a chance. So he's got to wait for that opportunity. I think that's the shift that we're going to see. That's just my sense. We'll see what he says.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear, or I am anticipating, hearing what Brian Callahan has to say, because you got to be very careful with this situation, and you got to be strategic as well, because even though there is only three games left, like you said, Willie, Mason Rudolph could get hurt, and then you have to go back to Will. So I'm anticipating him saying something to the effect of, hey, we haven't given up on Will Levis. He may be still in their plans moving forward, but he's going – we may need to put him back in there just in case of injury or something, but we're not completely out on Will Levis. But we just felt that this was a good time for him to kind of sit back and watch a little bit more. I'm anticipating something like that. If he goes all cavalier and said, we're done with Will Levis, then if you're going that far, then you might as well cut him or trade him. And I'm not – listen, I'm not sitting here and saying I'm opposed to them trading Will Levis. I wouldn't recommend that they cut him, at least try to get something for him. But I'm not sitting here saying that, oh, I'm advocating for him to be traded. But if you do go down that route of, oh, we're done with Will Levis, and you make it known to everyone, then you might as well trade him away. Because why do you then bring him into the next season if you are out completely on him?
Joe Rexroad had an interesting point this morning about Will Levis's future with the organization, because as we've discussed many times, Levis, as noted by Paul Kaharsky, remains under an affordable contract through 2026 with a guaranteed salary of $1.6 million in 2025 with a $2.6 million cap number and a guaranteed salary of $1.24 million and a cap number of $3.04 million in 2026 per over the cap. So he remains on an affordable contract. Rex Rhodes' point was, I wonder how Levis will be if he remains on the team, but he is the clear-cut backup. And Rex Rhodes made the distinction. Not the backup last season when Ryan Tannehill was starting, and Levis knew that at some point he was going to overtake or replace, succeed, whichever word you want to use, Tannehill. But being a clear-cut backup, knowing that unless there is some sort of injury, you are going to be number two.
Well,
how does he handle that? Does he have the personality to handle that?
Well, we'll find out in these three games. We will find out in these three games. We don't have to wait until next year.
That's true.
We will find out what is his demeanor for the next three games. If indeed Brian Callahan is saying, you know, Will would be the backup for the remainder of the season. Watch his demeanor. You know, if things start to change within a locker room, there will be some leakage out of that locker room saying such that.
You don't want leakage. Leakage is bad.
But I picture Will Levis as a uber competitive guy, but he'll take this opportunity to reflect and just watch. That's how I perceive Will Levis to be. I don't perceive Will Levis to be a pouter. And I don't perceive Will Levis to be a guy that's going to quit on his team and say, y'all don't want me that star, forget it. I'm just going to go through the motions. I don't picture Will Levis as that type of athlete. I picture him as, you know, saying, okay, all right, let me show y'all and continue to be more than engaged for the remainder of the season. And then go into the offseason proving to this coaching staff that he is going to be a much better quarterback heading to next year. That's what I picture Will Levis. That's the athlete I picture Will Levis to be. Now, will it turn out that way? I don't know. But we will get a clear-cut, you know, answer in regards to how does Will Levis, how will he take this going into next season? Well, we look no further than the next three games remaining on his schedule, if indeed Will Levis doesn't remain the starter for the duration of the season.
There are certain players in sports. I found this as a minor league baseball player as the 25th round pick, and the same draft they drafted a first baseman with the second round pick. And you notice at spring training, the guys who got the big signing bonuses who were drafted in the first and second round, they tend to get more opportunities. They have more attention on them. They have a, I don't want to say easier path, but they have the path sort of laid out for them. They're going to get the extra opportunities, whereas the lower guys have to fight their way past that. I think Levis has now graduated from that guy, right? Or, hey, this is the guy we drafted. Let's develop him. Let's see if we can get it. To he's going to have to fight his way back. We had this discussion a lot with Treylon Burks, right? For the first couple of years, it's like, hey, we drafted this guy in the first round. Let's see if we can make him our main guy, and it just didn't happen. Right, and then going into this year, they sort of started to move on. He was still on the roster. There were still chances for him to move up, but he was going to have to earn it himself. He's going to have to work through it. He wasn't going to be handed the opportunity on the front side. And I think that's where Levis is now. That's what I see, and that's probably what it should be. You've got 20 games. The numbers speak for themselves. They're so low that you cannot ignore it. I had a friend of mine say, "Well, why wouldn't they just play it out with Levis? What are you getting when you play Rudolph?" That's a fair question to ask, but there's got to be a higher standard, right? Especially for a first-year coach trying to prove that he's building something here.
Yeah, I think they've given him And the key word is giving. They've given him opportunity after opportunity. And I heard Paul, I think it was this, yeah, it was this morning, it was either Paul or Joe, Rex wrote, not Big Joe. They were
too many Joes, yeah, too many Masons.
Exactly. They were saying, well, yeah, Paul made the comment of the quarterback is he's going to get he's treated different from everybody else. And Paul's absolutely right about that. But what Will Levis has to understand, even though you're treated differently, but your opportunities, you may have more opportunities, but there comes a point. Say, if Willie, if you have only two opportunities to get the job done, then Adam, as a first rounder, he may get four or five opportunities.
Exactly.
Well, if on that fifth opportunity, Adam doesn't improve, now I gotta move away from him. I gotta show him, like I showed you, Willie, if you can't get the job done, even though I only gave you two shots, but you were a lower round draft pick, I gave him double the shots I gave you, and he still couldn't do it. So ultimately, as a head coach or manager, I have to make the decision that's best for the team because they're all watching. They're not watching that you gave him another opportunity. They're watching that you keep on giving him opportunity after opportunity after opportunity.
Right. If any other position graded as low as Levis is grading, by all metrics, you can look at any website that looks at the main stats, and if you look the next level with the analytics, he grades so low. If you were playing any other position, you would have to be replaced.
You'd have been replaced long ago.
And the locker room has to see that, right? When you're ineffective, the locker room notices.
Oh, they see
that,
it.
Look, if we that were it. Me, I'd be out. But here's the quarterback. He was the second-round pick. They want him to develop. How long are we going to keep running him out there? And I think they just reached the point where they have to
enough
try something
enough.
Else. Yeah.
It wasn't the only quarterback benching that happened yesterday in the NFL. Last night, the Atlanta Falcons announced that Kirk Cousins is out and Michael Penix is in.
Mm.
What do we think about that decision? Kirk Cousins has struggled mightily.
Spartan dog.
Yes, my Spartan. Dines,
what, are you a little
sad? I didn't even put that together. That's true.
Yeah. My Spartan dog, he's not playing well.
And it's interesting they did it after a win.
Yeah.
Now, they beat a team that's even more miserable than the Titans right now and the Raiders. Who
it wasn't the final score 15-9?
Yeah, it
was not a scintillating game at all.
But he's not playing well. I'm sure he understands that. I'm sure a part of it in his mind is this is the first year after my injury. Now I'm getting back in the saddle. It may look a little different. I am surprised that they made the switch so quickly, which tells me that Penix was going to be the guy next year, flat out. He was going to be the guy next year because if he's not the guy next year, what you do is you continue to play Kirk Cousins because you understand that Achilles heel was last year. He's still getting over it, and he hasn't reached that point just yet where, you know, he doesn't feel any ill effects from that Achilles. If he was in your plans for next year, you would give him grace and say, next year I know for sure he will be a much better quarterback because it would be a full calendar year, probably more than that, since the injury. But they didn't do that. They went to Penix, which means he will not be on that. They will try their damnedest to trade Kirk Cousins in the offseason. They're going to try to trade Kirk Cousins in the offseason because this is a situation where you can't go back now. You don't go back.
You know what's interesting is they got all that criticism on the draft day. Like, wait a minute, you just paid all this money for Cousins, and then you draft Penix in the first round, who's not a 21-year-old, but an older quarterback who had played a lot of extra years in college. Like we see a lot. Bo Nix is, you know, succeeding in Denver right now to a degree. Then I don't know if they're winning because of him, but he's getting the job done enough to have them on the verge of the playoffs. But Penix is kind of that same age, a little bit like a Will Levis, where if you wait another couple years, the guy's going to be 27, 28 years old.
Yeah.
Like, but they're still in the race. You know, this isn't like, let's let the rookie play because these games don't matter. They're still within a game of the division lead.
Exactly.
So this is a really interesting story.
It is. And listen, it's weird because, you know, this is how Kirk Cousins' career started. them draft a quarterback in the first round, them draft a quarterback in the fifth round, Kirk Cousins.
Robert Griffin.
And then he sort of works his way, and he ends up being a starter. Well, essentially, this is what it is. You bring in a veteran guy, high-priced veteran guy, and you draft a quarterback in the first round. Eventually, Kirk Cousins knowing he has to know in his mind that my window here is very short, because just like me taking over for Robert Griffin III, they're doing that with Penix in regards to me. So it's going to be interesting to see how they maneuver with that, because they're going to be looking to trade them. Because cutting Kirk Cousins isn't going to help your team as far as salary cap wise. But then who is the team that is going to then pick it up? I dare say.
To be continued.
Here in Nashville. But
Here are some of the particulars as it relates to the contract numbers for Kirk Cousins, according to ESPN. Mm-hmm. His four-year deal has real guaranteed money in only the first two seasons. As such, Cousins represents a $40 million cap hit next year, all of which is guaranteed. If the Falcons cut him in the offseason with a post-June 1st designation, he'd hit the 2025 cap for all that $40 million in dead money, and then another $25 million in dead cap for 2026. Yeah. Cousins traded at the start of the 2025 league year, another team would take on his $27.5 million in base salary, and the Falcons would take only $37.5 million in total dead money, only $37.5 million in dead money, as opposed to the $65 million they'd otherwise take over 2 years. It's certainly the preferable outcome for the Falcons' checkbook, and I imagine they trade Cousins for meager draft capital accordingly. Mm-hmm. At a cheap price, a day three pick, there will certainly be suitors. The Jets, Giants, Titans, and Raiders will all need a quarterback next year.
And Kirk Cousins could be that bridge guy. Now, he will be another.
That's a lot of money, man.
People can't. But that's not a lot of money. It's really not a lot of money. $27 million.
Tua and those guys, the going rate's, what, 50?
Yeah.
And so you're getting him in the 20s?
Yeah, I think that's true.
Ryan Tannehill was 38 or so the last couple years that he played.
Rand Carthon, this is one thing he can do. If this is indeed an opportunity and you believe that after that second year, because Kirk Cousins hasn't had any setbacks as far as his health. It's just him getting over that Achilles. And you figure, I think everyone figure, because there will be a lot of suitors, everyone figures that second year be better than the initial year after the injury.
He reminds me of another Falcons quarterback near the end of his career, Matt Ryan, a little bit. I feel like where things have been going with Cousins, it's reminiscent of where things might have been going with Ryan.
But I think he's playing better. I think he's playing better other than the last stretch. I think he was playing better than the Falcons quarterback,
Matt Ryan.
I think he's playing better than Matt Ryan was. It just seemed to fall off the cliff once Matt Ryan got to Indianapolis. But I think Kirk Cousins, because he started off the season pretty good.
Yeah, he's
had some
good games.
And now it seems like he's tired. Like, he doesn't have that zip on the ball. And maybe a lot of it has to do because he's a traditional pocket thrower. Maybe a lot has to do with his lower half, like his lower body and the Achilles, where he can't get that spin on the ball or that speed on the ball that he needs. Now that the season has gone on, and you figure the next following year, he will be a much better version of himself. This to me rings Ryan Tannehill at least for 1 year or two. If you can get you a quarterback in the draft this year or next year, you get a guy like Kirk Cousins, who is a consummate pro. He is above average quarterback. He's a guy that can win football games for you. Protect him, he'll be fine. That's the big key. Protect him. Protect him, he'll be fine. But he can be one of those bridge guys for you for 2 years as you go into that stadium that honestly can win games for you.
He'll be 37 next year. It'll be his age 37 season next year. There are some guys that can still do it. There's some guys that, they start hitting the wall and they can't quite get it
because
done.
Because your options are going to be limited here.
Oh, yeah. Just throw them on the pile of guys that you're looking to, as you said, kind of bridge you until you find the next solution.
615-737-1025. We're willing this thing to existence, perhaps. Tennessee Titans quarterback Kirk Cousins. How does that sound?
another Spartan dog. See, when you had Spartan dogs on your team was good. Myself, yes. Conklin, and come on, bring on Kirk Cousins. Come on, do it.
Oh, man. 615-737-1025. We will talk Titans quarterback throughout the show. Brian Callahan scheduled to address reporters at around 1:15. Curious to see what he has to say, though reports have surfaced that Mason Rudolph will take over as Titans quarterback. Coming up next, Mitch Light, college football editor from The Athletic, will join us. We'll preview the college football playoff, which starts this weekend. Excited for that. But before we do, 102.5 The Game and Cromwell Media have teamed up with the Nashville Predators for Coats for Kids, benefiting the Boys and Girls Club of Middle Tennessee. Donate a new or slightly used coat at the game studio or at the Fordyce Centers in Antioch, Bellevue, and Clarksville. This Friday, the game will be at the Fordyce Center in Bellevue from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., taking donations, giving away swag, and tickets to an upcoming Predators game. Coat donations will also be accepted at the Preds' home game at Bridgestone Arena on Saturday. For more information, visit thegamenashville.com/coats. This week's Nashville's best deal is Brewster's Real Ice Cream in Hendersonville. Brewster's offers handcrafted cakes, pies, and ice cream flavors such as peppermint Oreo, eggnog, and gingerbread man. Enjoy the magic of homemade happiness this season. Visit thegamenashville.com/deals now and get half off a $50 gift card while supplies last. Willie Darnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you, joined on our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com by Mitch Light, college football editor of The Athletic. Mitch, it is college football playoff first round weekend. Let's start with the game most people around here want to talk about. That is number 9 Tennessee at number 8 Ohio State. As you analyze this game, what is the clearest path to victory for the Volunteers against the Buckeyes?
To score more points than the Buckeyes.
Thank you. Thank you that hard-hitting analysis.
Are we done? Yeah, sorry.
You got a busy day, Mitch? You're just trying to make this quick?
I do. I got a meeting in 3 minutes. So those are my predictions. Yeah, there are a lot of different ways to look at this game. The thing that's most interesting to me is Ohio State's ability to protect Will Howard. You know, we all know what happened in their offensive line down the stretch. They lost two starters basically in the last 3 or 4 games. And you know, it's really difficult on a week-to-week basis to reshuffle your line and figure things out. And basically, 2 full days of practice. You know, I think it's Tuesday and Wednesday are their real days of practice. But when you've got several weeks now, I think it's kind of a blessing in disguise for Ohio State that they did not play in the Big Ten championship game. They've got an extra week to sort out their offensive line. So I think it'll be better than we saw in the last couple of weeks. But obviously, that's Tennessee's strength, you know, getting to the quarterback. So I think that's going to be – and also, you know, when they do get to him, can they contain him? Well, Howard does have the ability to run the ball. I think on the other way, it's big plays. You know, this Tennessee offense, there have been big plays to be made in the passing game that for the most part they haven't made on a consistent basis, whether it's a drop, whether it's an overthrow. And Ohio State has been good. They're among the Big Ten leaders in basically every category, you know, allowing pass plays of 20 yards, 30 yards, 40 yards. They did not get beat often in the passing game. Although Denzel Burke, one of their, you know, in theory, one of their better cornerbacks, did not have a great year. A lot of teams picked on him, so I'd be interested to see what happens there. So this is the best game of the weekend, and I think it's the one with so many good, like, storylines as far as matchups, strengths versus weaknesses.
In the crowd, I've seen a lot of stories about a Tennessee fan takeover at Ohio Stadium, as much as a visiting fan base can take over another stadium. But I'm curious about the atmosphere in all of this. Just from Ohio State specifically, they lost to Michigan. There's pressure on Ryan Day. I've seen plenty of talking heads say it's national championship or bust for Ryan Day, although I believe their AD came out and said he's absolutely coming back as coach. But I'm wondering about the atmosphere for Ohio State specifically, if what you think that could do to the team if things don't go well at the start of the game.
Yeah, it could be toxic, and I've heard several people, I think Kirk Herbstreit even came out and said this, that they might have been better off playing on the road. We've all been in enough stadiums to know with an angry fan base, the three and out, the groans in the crowd. I think stuff like that, you can feel it more in basketball and in college baseball because the venues are smaller. You know, we've all been in basketball arenas with that nervous energy when the home team's losing, whatever. It's not, to me, as palpable in football just because of the nature of the stadium, but there's a lot of negativity up there. you know, I you don't know how the psyche of the fans, but there's got to be some Ohio State fans who are probably hoping they lose and Ryan Gay gets fired, as crazy as that sounds. So I think from a playing free, nothing to lose, all that stuff, Tennessee, you know, they've got stuff to lose. Obviously, they have high goals. But I think there's a lot of pressure on Ohio State, and they can say all the right things, but they definitely feel it.
Talk with Mitch Light of The Athletic discussing college football and more poignant, the college football playoffs. Now, Mitch, if the Big Ten, say if Oregon, because I think Oregon to me is the front runner to win a national championship, considered the way they played all season, they've been the most consistent team. If the Big Ten manages to win back-to-back national championships, does it start to change the narrative of who's the most dominant division out there? Because you can't have the excuse for the SEC that it was a down year. It hasn't been a down year for the SEC. It's been more competitive, but I don't believe it's been a down year for the SEC. But if the Big Ten manages to win back-to-back championships, do you believe it starts to change the narrative somewhat?
Yeah, it helps, no doubt. I mean, what happened when the SEC emerged as the dominant conference in the late 2000s? Mm-hmm. It was not just that they were winning national championships. It was different programs winning mm-hmm. national championships. It was Florida, and it was Alabama, and it was LSU, you know, and that's really what made the league really start to emerge, you know. And then if you have Michigan winning and Oregon winning, and Ohio State's been one of the most consistent programs in the last decade, and they're not even among that group. So it's like beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Do you judge a league by its overall depth or its ability to win the title, or not ability, it's actually winning the title? I think no, even Big Ten fans would argue the SEC is deeper. You know, the mm-hmm. Big Ten kind of falls off a cliff a little bit. SEC has a lot more depth, but there's no denying that if they win another national title with another team, they are kind of elbowing their way, if they already haven't, closer to the SEC. It's already the Big mm-hmm. Two and everyone else because of all the finances and stuff, but it would be really feather in their cap if another team won a title.
Now, another question I had that I thought about last night in regards to the college football playoffs. We saw what the committee did with Florida State when their quarterback got hurt. It basically eliminated Florida State from the college football playoffs. And maybe it was because when the injury happened, but you look at a guy like Carson Beck, who, for all intents and purposes, if he can't play, it diminishes Georgia's ability to, you know, operate the way they normally do, and it lessens their chances of winning. Do you think, had that injury happened prior to the SEC championship game, do you think there would have been some talks of how do we seed Georgia, knowing that they may not have their starting quarterback for the playoffs?
Yeah, I think it would have affected their seeding, especially obviously if they didn't win the national and win the SEC championship. You know, we can't even talk about them not making the field. I've heard that argument, which is dumb because obviously they won the SEC championship. The big difference, obviously, is Florida State proved it was not mm-hmm. nearly as good of a team offensively once its quarterback got hurt last year, once Jordan Travis got hurt. Where Georgia, they didn't necessarily look great offensively, but they won a game against a very good Texas defense with Gunnar Stockton at quarterback. So, but your question is more if there were more games and they had struggled. Sure, I think let's say it happened 2 or 3 weeks earlier and they barely beat Georgia Tech and they got blown out or didn't look good against Texas and they lost that SEC championship game. I could have seen them sliding from a potential 5 or 6 to 8 or 9 seed, and I think that would have been fair, and I think that would have been consistent with the message they sent last year, even though each committee is different, each committee has a different makeup, and obviously the goals this year of seeding 12 teams was different than 4 teams last year.
We're talking to Mitch Light from The Athletic, and we're setting up the college football playoff. Mitch, this I'm sure will be a bigger question next week, as it's the week of the game, but presuming that Carson Beck is out, what do we know about Gunnar Stockton and what Georgia will try to do as they start game planning around him?
Yeah, good athlete. He was a 5-star for a lot of the process. I think he ended up being a 4-star, but a top 100 kid who was originally committed to South Carolina. But then when Mike Bobo got fired as the offensive coordinator, or that staff got fired at South Carolina, he decommitted and stayed went with Georgia. So he's been in the system for years. I think heading the SEC championship game, I can't imagine he got a lot of reps in practice the week before. So you would think that they tried to keep things much more simple for him in that game with several weeks to prepare. I think they'll put more on his plate. Again, he's a good athlete. I think with the, you know, if they, depending on who they play, you know, I think they will still lean on the defense, not ask him to make too many throws. He did try to make one big throw, and I think it was the interception in there. So that's always watching in situations like this. When it's third and eight, how much do they trust their quarterback? Yeah. And I think we'll find out early in the game there. But I think they can win with Gunnar Stockton. Obviously, winning three straight games will be far more difficult. But it's not like this guy has no talent. He is, you know, was highly regarded coming out of high school.
Yeah, that is going to be a big story. I'm not sure how much they trusted Carson Beck at third and eight.
True.
In some of these weeks where he was throwing the ball to the wrong team. Mitch, I looked at the weather forecast for Notre Dame, Penn State, and Ohio State, and it's all in the 20s. And so it doesn't look like there's going to be a snowstorm or anything crazy like that. But I am curious, like with an SMU or a Tennessee that like to run the high tempo. Now, Tennessee, I realize, has been able to evolve a little bit. They realize that running the ball and playing good defense is a better way to go. But I'm curious about how the wide-open spread offenses that we see go to work. You don't have to think about the weather in bowl games, but the weather will be a factor in some of these winter games.
Doppler-Donick, doing a little show prep. I like it. My
Doppler-Donick,
My overall, I'm going to sort of contradict myself, but my overall stance is this weather has been wildly, wildly overplayed. First of all, like, nobody likes playing in the cold weather. People act like at Penn State they play in 20-degree weather all season. That's not the case. I mean, it doesn't really get frigidly cold until December, January. So it's not like Penn State's used to playing in really, really cold temperatures. They have an indoor practice facility. They don't practice in the cold a lot. So it's uncomfortable for everyone. And kind of big picture, I think a lot of people in the North don't realize this. It gets very cold in Lexington, Nashville, Fayetteville, Knoxville. These SEC teams do play in cold weather, just maybe not as cold. But I think it will, of all the matchups, I think it could affect SMU the most. You know, Kevin Jennings is a Texas kid, their quarterback. They clearly don't play in much weather, probably worse than 50 degrees, and they do kind of go high tempo and all that. So of all the matchups, I think that's the only one where it could really have an effect is SMU. And I'm interested to see, you know, there's nothing they can really do to prepare for it. They'll just have to adjust and deal with it.
Texas is the biggest favorite. So what would Clemson need to do to be competitive in that game?
I think they need to run the ball a lot. You know, Phil Moff is a good running back, one of the more underrated running backs. And Kate Klubnik's really good, you know. I didn't really look at, I don't know how many rushing yards he had this year, but it seems like a lot of their big plays this year were, you know, maybe fake handoffs and Klubnik going for long runs. He's a good athlete, interesting case there. You know, he's an Austin kid going back home. He played against Quinn Ewers in the state championship game, I think there. So I think they're going to have to run the ball a lot. And another thing about this game, if it's close, they've had a lot of kicking problems. I know they won the ACC championship game on a, like, 56-yard field goal with the gun, but they had maybe eight kicks blocked this year. I think it was eight, including two, maybe six field goals and two extra points. They had two field goals blocked in their home loss to Louisville. So, you know, they've had time to shore that up, I would think, but they also could have shored it up more during the year. So a little thing like that, getting a kick blocked, and because they're going to have to be nearly perfect to win this game. And obviously, you know, botching a kick is not being perfect.
These games are going to be so much fun to watch for sure. Behind the scenes, though, I know you follow this. The madness of the portal, it gets crazier every year, and you've got teams that are getting ready for a bowl game. They don't know who they're going to have. All of this stuff. How do you, this is always the question, but what are you hearing about the idea, the movement of trying to come up with some structure to make it a little less crazy?
Here's the problem. There's no good solution. And, I mean, I know that's a cop-out, but one of the big problems is the academic calendar. I mean, I know some teams are on quarter system and maybe don't start January 10th or anything like that, but you can't stretch it out too long because kids have to enroll. Here's one thing that I don't know if we've written about it yet. I know Sam Kahn, one of our writers, has talked to a lot of coaches. And one thing, people have thrown out there is getting rid of spring football, maybe having just a kind of weekend OTAs, and then there's not that pressure to get enrolled right away. And, oh, I missed spring practice. There's no way I can compete for the job. And then maybe just having a portal window in the spring. I don't know if this would ever come to fruition, but that, if you think about it, it makes a lot more sense than people rushing decisions. You finish the semester, you're not missing spring practice. And I kind of joked this about the other day. There's a reason this could work. It's because, you know, schools aren't losing money. I know, I guess some, they sell concessions at spring games. I get it. But it's not like a huge TV deal. Like, certain things aren't going to change because they're money makers. Eliminating spring practice in a spring game doesn't really cost the school money. So, again, maybe far-fetched, but if you think about it, that one kind of makes sense.
Mitch Light, college football editor of The Athletic, joining us on D-Maze, Vingan, and Donick. Mitch, always a pleasure. Have a Merry Christmas and enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the games this weekend.
Remember, guys, the team that scores the most points is probably going to win.
Expert analysis you can only get from Mitch Light right here.
Thank you very much for recognizing that.
Yes.
Take care, guys.
Thanks, Mitch. Doppler Donick, I think we have a new nickname for right. you.
Yeah, there we go. You know what?
Got a high of 29 in Columbus.
Willie, that may be difficult as I'm thinking about what where you and Mitch were discussing. In theory, I think, you know, taking away that spring game so guys can make that transition is good. But I think it's a part of these networks because now they're televising them.
They are.
They're televising the games. So now is it a part of the package? If it's a part of the package, there's no way you can get rid of it.
615-737-1025. We'll get back into the Titans quarterback situation coming up next. But it's bowl season, and the Game Nashville Sports Network is your home for college football bowl games and the college football playoff presented by Twin Peaks and Parman Tractor and Equipment. Today, catch the Art of Sport LA Bowl on 94.9 The Fan, California, and UNLV. They'll kick off at 8 o'clock. For a list of games carried on the Game Nashville Sports Network, visit thegamenashville.com/bowlgames. Tune into 102.5, 106.3 The Game tonight for Vanderbilt men's basketball. The Commodores take on the Citadel at Memorial Gym with a 7 o'clock tip-off, and the pregame show starts at 6:30. Coverage is also available on the 102.5 The Game app and at thegamenashville.com. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow will join us in the next segment to start the second hour. Back to the Titans quarterback situation.
By the way, Vanderbilt basketball, men's and women's, looking good so far. Looking
and,
good.
And just to there. Say that and to double on that, yes, they are. But obviously, I watched them as Spartans, and I watched them last night. They beat up on Oakland. But I didn't realize that Barry Sanders' son was playing for the Spartans. He had a nice little jump shot.
Okay.
The crowd went wild.
Okay.
But they spent the whole time talking about Barry Sanders rather than his son. So
it's like when Scottie Pippen Jr. Exactly. was at Vanderbilt. Scottie Pippen was always in that front row. He got so much camera time.
It'll be fascinating when SEC play starts for Vanderbilt, considering the domination of the SEC in men's college basketball, be it Tennessee, Auburn, Kentucky, Alabama, Florida with a big win last night against North Carolina. Thank you, Florida, for that. I appreciate it. And further, and
you need to send them an early Christmas present, man.
Yes. Well, my dad got a chuckle out of all of the Bill Belichick stuff that happened last week. He said to me, "Did you hear what he said his first two words were?" And I said, "Yes, beat Duke." Those were Bill Belichick's first two words, apparently. So okay. Him and I are not on speaking terms, not that we ever were. But anyway, back to the Titans quarterback situation. One thing that I think is going to be good, for lack of a better word, about these next three games, if we assume that Mason Rudolph is going to start at quarterback for the remainder of the season. And we'll see what Brian Callahan has to say. As you said, Willie, I'm curious to see how he spins this and how he tries to control the narrative about the Will Levis situation. But if Mason Rudolph is the starting quarterback for the Tennessee Titans for the remainder of the season, that removes the biggest scapegoat for the Titans' struggles. If Will Levis isn't playing, you can't blame it on him. So I think that's an interesting sort of subplot to this remainder of the season. Again, assuming Will Levis is not going to play quarterback for the Titans again this season. Depending on how they do, if things don't go well, you can't fall back on, well, it was the quarterback's fault. No. So I'm really curious to see how that plays out.
But whether, at least to me, whether this team, you know, wins the remainder of their games with Mason Rudolph underneath center or they lose him. I think the main purpose of this was so that those other guys give you the maximum effort possible, that they believe that, okay, now we're going out here. Now we have someone underneath center that is going to do the little things that coach is asking them to do. Because the worst thing you can have is the defense going out there and playing the way that they did against Jacksonville, and you still end up losing. Like, that shouldn't have been the case. You should have been able to pull that game up. But because of some of the things the quarterback did, it didn't allow you to win that game. So those guys are like, man, just give us an opportunity. That's all we want is an opportunity. And if Mason Rudolph gives us that opportunity, then so be it. Because, listen, Will, for the last two games, he hasn't looked great. More importantly, the last game, he hasn't looked – he reverted back to him old, his old self. So at least give us an opportunity. If we're doing our job, then give us an opportunity to win. Not to say that we're not – that we are going to win, but at least I know that with Mason Rudolph as center – at underneath center, he's going to do the things that is not – that is going to put us in position to succeed. Unlike Will Levis. Will Levis is basically a ticking time bomb. That's just what he is. Like, you just wait for the next shoe to drop with Will Levis. And that's not a place you want to be as an organization. It's waiting on, like, man, okay, he's playing okay, but I know sooner or later, there it is. Back to being Will Levis. You don't want that type of, you don't want that type of feeling in your locker room.
Rudolph is going to be an interesting one. Remember how well he played at the end of last year with the Steelers? Mm-hmm. He clearly has limitations physically. But if you look at his performances this year, keep in mind that the bulk of his games, like the two starts, he had to take the pounding in Buffalo and in Detroit. Really tough places to function.
Yeah.
So that And yet, still, his numbers are better than Will Levis's. I don't think there's any argument. You can't say that, well, what difference does it make? No, there is a difference for what you said. He physically, he doesn't have the skills, but he's a better, more seasoned quarterback that I think gives you a better chance of winning.
He's a better thought processor.
Right. And it long-term, he's not the solution. Mm-hmm. But I think what it looks to me they're trying to do is they're trying to continue to establish a foundation of, okay, we got to grow this offense. We got to get more out of Ridley. We got to get Tajay Spears going here. We've got to function as a team and look like a good football team.
I think the worst thing you can do is, as an organization, and you've already given Amy your vision and your plan, the worst thing you can do is continue to throw Will Levis out there. And you're not – the plan and the vision that you have is being derailed. And now you got to go into your owner's office at the end of the season and try to explain that. But she's thinking in her mind, where's the process? Where's the vision? Where's the plan? Because it didn't – with him underneath center, it didn't look nothing like what y'all told me. Well, at least Mason Rudolph may give them the opportunity to stick to the plan and the process – and for her to see tangible things out on the field. Because I'm sure she's like, I don't see it, so you're going to have to really convince me. It's easier to convince her when you go in our office that the plan is still in place when you can see it on the field. It may not be monumental, but you can see some steps, and they can't do that with Will Levis underneath center.
615-737-1025. We'll get Jonathan Hutton's thoughts on all of this coming up next. Tomorrow, it's your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click. If you correctly guess a Preds player that scores a goal in the Preds game tomorrow night, you win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. Participate with Robbie and Rexroad tomorrow morning at 8:45.